Well, it has now been a month since the now infamous recording of L.A. Clippers owner Donald Sterling's racist remarks were released by the gossip site TMZ. Sterling was recorded secretly by his girlfriend V. Stiviano, and he was recorded in California, which is one of the few states in the country that requires both parties in a conversation to give their consent to that recording. Stiviano says she was Sterling's archivist and had blanket permission to record him at any time. But do the laws in general need to be updated in the digital age? We're joined now by two First Amendment lawyers who come down on different sides of this issue. Mark Rondazza, a First Amendment attorney based in Las Vegas, and Joel Kurtzberg, First Amendment lawyer from Cahill, Gordon, and Rindell in New York. And Joel, let's start with you. Many of the laws governing recording were written long before the internet. Do you think they need to be updated?
I don't think so. I think that the majority of states are only one-party consent states. I think it's 38. Have one-party consent laws, and there are a minority that don't.
One-party consent laws, by the way, just so that people understand what that means, it means that if I'm calling you and I want to record the phone call, I'm the only one who has to consent to that. You don't. In other words, I can record you without your knowledge.
That's correct. And that is what the overwhelming majority of the states have as their law. There are a minority of states, and California is one of them where the Sterling matter was supposedly recorded, that require two parties. And there is a federal statute that is basically seen as a floor. It expressly says that the states can pass more rigorous laws if it wants. And it pretty much provides for one-party consent as well.
Mark, do you think that the laws need to be updated?
I would like to see every state have two-party consent. I think that one-party consent troubles me even before the modern age. But when you think about the fact that anything somebody says could be recorded at any time and then can be published and republished digitally, I think that the prevention of that in order to protect people's privacy is probably a good idea.
It does seem, though, like if we are moving in the direction of everyone having a recording device and a majority of states, as you say, having only one-party consent laws, we're unprotected. Anybody could record us at any time and give that information over to the media and put it out on the air, whether it's something atrocious like what Donald Sterling said or if it's something just embarrassing to you personally. Joel?
Well, there's a flip side to that coin as well, right? I mean, the fact that all of us now have potential recording devices means that you also could be in technical violation of the law every time you take out your phone and you videotape somebody in the street doing something. Now, there could be First Amendment protections depending on if what's happening is newsworthy or things like that. But the reality is you're also running the risk of making a lot of people into criminals for doing fairly mundane things. Now, one answer to that is that, well, prosecutors aren't going to go after those folks, but I'm not sure we want to trust the prosecutors to exercise their discretion wisely all the time.
Mark, what do you think?
I think that if any state does update its law to be a two-party consent, those concerns should be taken into account. And if you are, for example, in a place where you have no reasonable expectation of privacy, I would advocate for an exception. Yeah, if you're standing on the side of the road, you know, screaming into a bullhorn, I don't think that you have any reasonable expectation that nobody's going to videotape you or record you without your consent. I think I would rather see these laws narrowly tailored to cover only conversations that are presumed to be private.
While I have two First Amendment lawyers with me, I would like to ask you about another big story in the news, and that is this European Union case where the court there ruled that people should be allowed to get Google to redact information about them on the web so that when you Google somebody, certain things that may not be good for their image don't pop up all the time. What do you make of that? First, let's start with you, Joel.
I think it's a terrible decision. I think there are a lot of problems with the ruling. The biggest one is that it's going to keep important information out of the public domain. There are provisions in the decision that are supposed to address that, but I think that they're very inadequate.
Mark?
I respectfully disagree. I think that the decision really only affects search engine results. And it does not extinguish primary information, and it also has a limitation for any information that might be of public interest. So if somebody's, for example, a public figure, then they're not going to be able to get these search engine results removed for themselves.
Well, do you expect that we will have a right to privacy added in some way? Because we do seem to be moving in the direction away from privacy and more toward information being able to get out there no matter what, and the government being able to collect all kinds of information on us at all times.
You know, being here in Vegas, I'm going to give you really, really long odds on that.
Hmm.
I very much doubt that you will see an expansion of privacy laws in the United States. Pretty much everybody with any clout in the political process doesn't want that. The government sure doesn't want that. Everybody wave hello to the NSA. And really, a lot of businesses don't want that. Let's not forget what's happening here. You know, Google is no longer the little upstart that somebody started in a lab and is taking on the big boys. They're the big boys now. And if reducing every one of us to a Google bite so that we can be the raw materials for their profits, that's their goal. They're not going to let anything get in the way of that. And I think they're going to be able to buy a lot better lobbyists than those of us who might want to say that this is fundamentally changing what it means to be human. I don't like the idea of somebody being able to suppress truthful information about themselves that is relevant. But when you think about the obscure people that you know in your life who have chosen to be that way, should Google really have a right to take the details of their lives? And if there's just one event that anybody has in their life that might be worthy of a Google search, to have that be the defining event in their life? I think that philosophically, it is worth looking at and saying that that's, you know, that really should be something that we don't discount so readily.
We're speaking with First Amendment lawyers Mark Rondazza and Joel Kurtzberg. You're listening to Here and Now. It's Here and Now, and if you're just joining us, we've been talking about privacy and two recent stories in the news that raise questions about how much privacy we have or should have. First, the case of disgraced LA Clippers owner Donald Sterling, caught on tape saying racist remarks. The recordings were done secretly by V. Stiviano, who says she had permission to do that because she was his archivist. We're also looking at a recent EU court ruling that Google users have a right to ask the company to remove links about them. Attorney Mark Rondazza applauded that EU decision, as we heard before the break. He says we need more privacy protections in the law. We're also speaking with New York First Amendment lawyer Joel Kurtzberg. And Joel, what do you think about that ruling?
Well, I respectfully disagree with Mark on this. I think this is just a bad idea. I do think that you could conjure up sympathetic scenarios of individuals who are harmed by some event that happened a very, very long time ago. But there's a real problem with sanitizing history, even on the net, links to what actually happened so that they don't show up in searches. And there's a problem even with the exception that Mark is pointing to. The reality is people don't start out as public figures. You don't know if someone who's a private figure now, who's doing something, and then, you know, 10 years ago they asked for it to be removed because it's 10 years old, and then a year later they are going to run for public office.
But most of them will not do that.
But there are a lot of scenarios where there would be very important newsworthy information that would be buried from public view, and I do think that's a problem. The other problem is that it puts the burden on Google to show that this newsworthiness exception applies. And it doesn't have the right incentives to protect the public interest in doing so. It has every incentive, in fact, to just defer when it gets these requests to take down all of these things on the web. And by the way, it's going to be incredibly unmanageable. What I had heard was that in the first week alone after this decision came out, Google has received over 1,000 takedown requests, many of which came from convicted criminals, sex predators. There was one person who's going to be running for parliament who asked for a takedown. That's in 1 week. So who's going to be managing these decisions about whether or not to examine 1,000 requests to take them down each week, when there's just so much more incentive for Google to just say, oh, I'll take it down, then there'll definitely be no liability. I really do worry about important newsworthy information not getting out into the public eye.
Which brings me to the overarching question here, whether you're talking about search results or recordings, has the law caught up with the technology? Mark, I'll go to you first.
Well, I think in this case and in Europe, it's at least the Europeans trying to catch up with technology. You know, I think that we can look at this parade of possible problems that Google might have, but we can also look at Google, how it behaves now, for example, when it has to take down copyrighted materials under the DMCA. Google doesn't just automatically take that down. They send it to some mysterious center where people do screen these things, and very often Google will refuse to take it down if it is, for example, fair use. Google also has policies that supposedly prevent its servers from being used for abusive or harassing material, but it doesn't seem to take any of that down very often. All that this decision says is that Google has to look at the request and take into consideration the privacy rights of the requester. If it's, for example, a sex offender, well, I think Google would probably look at that and say the public has a right to know that.
But Mark, what about the overarching question? Has the law caught up with technology in this country?
I don't think so. You know, we are now the first generation to have a new, you know, a really new paradigm of what it is to be human. You know, this ability to go places without being under constant surveillance. You know, that's something you just had because that's what nature was. If you went for a walk down the street, it was pretty rare that somebody had a video camera and they'd be able to see what you were doing. Now, anything happens to anybody, it will immediately be perhaps recorded from multiple angles even, distributed globally immediately. And while that's a good thing when maybe we see a, you know, I'm representing a guy right now who he was a high school kid walking through a cafeteria and a teacher attacked him and then called the police and said that he attacked the teacher. Well, we had two camera angles showing that that was not the case. So that's one circumstance where I can say things are better now. But at the same time, am I always looking over my shoulder wondering, is there a camera here? Is there a recording device there? And you don't have to be doing something wrong for that to bother you.
Right.
I wouldn't have wanted to live in East Germany under the Stasi because I wouldn't want to be under constant surveillance. And that's what these two stories are really illustrating that we live under. Is our so-called archivist going to be recording us at some point that we don't want them to do so? And then once that happens, Google decides that it doesn't care and it's going to leave that up forever no matter what my privacy rights were. You know, it makes me seriously think about seeing if the 40 people in Pitcairn Island will let me have one of the cabins there and I'll live there.
Well, and it definitely makes you not want to have an archivist. Joel, let me finally go back to you. What do you think? Has the law caught up with technology on this issue?
These laws were not written with the internet in mind, at least some of them. But I do think that the law is catching up pretty quickly. There is a push in a lot of states to have what are so-called eraser laws that are similar to this. There's one out in California right now that I think is scheduled to go into effect next year that will allow minors to try to get things taken down that they put onto the web when they were underage. And you are seeing a lot of bills submitted in states to try to allow for similar types of narrowly drafted statutes. But I think all of this is really a question of line drawing. There are privacy interests and there are First Amendment or free speech interests. And it really is a question of how we balance them. And I think that here in the United States, there is not just in our law, but as a matter of politics and policy, a strong belief in what in the First Amendment case law they talk about the marketplace of ideas, that more information is better. The more information that gets out there, society is better off because there is this sort of march toward truth or more truth. And I think that our laws reflect that, and I don't think it's a bad thing. Now, having said that, I do think that there are legitimate privacy interests at times, and I do think that our laws do take those into account. The internet has complicated things because people can be recorded almost all the time and everyone can do the recording. But I do think that you are seeing the laws adapt and try to take those privacy interests into account. I don't think that what they did in Europe is a good thing, and I don't think you'll see that here.
Joel Kurtzberg, First Amendment attorney based in New York. And we've also been speaking with Mark Rondazza, a First Amendment attorney based in Las Vegas. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can send us your thoughts on this big topic. We've all got thoughts on it. hereandnow.org. This is Here and Now.